Well, my first memories, not necessarily of being Jewish in a small town, is really just going to school, really playing in the neighborhood. I was just talking the other day about remembering, well, we lived on a street, it was called George Street, and it was, when I was a kid, it was, you know, wasn't even paved, it was just a rocky road. There was a lot of activities. We had kids of all ages, like you would see in a kind of an old-fashioned movie. You know, everybody played, Red Rover, and hide and seek, and all of that stuff. Wintertime forts were made, and snowball raids, and all that stuff. But a lot happened on our street. At the top of the street were the Buffetts, and Dougie Buffett. I mean, he was one of the older ones in the neighborhood, and there was a lot of. My cousin Marta and Mark lived up the street from us. I guess there were just two Jewish families on the street at the time. The Goldmans had three houses across from us, three small houses that were all identical. And they lived down the street, the Goldmans. And there was a lot of camaraderie. You know, new neighbors would come in and there would be some a tussle or something, and the fathers would have to come out and get the boys to shake their hands. The McKeegans lived down the street from me. They lived until, I think, they moved away when I was in grade six. And she was my best friend, Leslie McKeegan. And I remember her, speaking of the Scottish, because they were a Scottish background. And her mother was a Bennett, and I became friendly with her cousin who lived down South Street. And hearing that strong kind of Irish accent, you know, was very powerful because they had really come over from Scotland. And so one grandmother lived with another daughter, I think, or maybe in her own home, I'm not sure. And then I remember the McKeegan Bakery, going with Leslie after school and just smelling homemade bread. It was a very powerful. Also, the grandmother sitting on a wooden chair, kind of not doing anything anymore, but just watching all the activity that went on around her. It was almost like she probably sat in that chair all day. It was a feeling you had. And of course, they all seemed old. They all had white hair. You know, they were old people. So I remember all that. I remember comic books were very big. We traded comics. It was so exciting when different, you know, series would come out, and people would have big stacks of comics. And it was like that was what they collected, was comics. And then starting school, it was South Street School, which was a little schoolhouse that had grade primary 1, 2, 3. That was very seminal too. I mean, the bell that would be rung, literally, you know, ringing the bell for recesses. There was a picture of Queen Victoria in the hallway. I remember the basements where we have to line up or line up outside, the monkey bars, not a lot, it wasn't playgrounds much, but, you know, friends that we would make, and this was another feature of Grace Bay, was the Catholic-Protestant dynamic, because everybody went to South Street School, whether you're Catholic or Protestant, obviously Jews went to the public school. And then in grade four, we went off to Brookside School. All our Catholic friends went off to Holy Cross. So that was a loss, actually, because some of my, I remember Glenda Matheson, I remember going to her home on Blackett Street. Her mother was very, very nice woman. We would, I don't know, there seemed to be like a tickle trunk or something with all kinds of dress-up things. I remember all of that. And, you know, you would go to people's homes and have milk and cookies easily. You know, it was very, very much like that. I have memories of that going to Hebrew school. Your dad and I walked most of the time, I think, from I guess grade two. There we were, just walking. It was a 15, 20 minute walk for kids, right through the town, and there we went. You know, we were 7 years old. You know, there was nobody picking us up, and I guess we got picked up afterwards. We certainly didn't walk home, but there we were. We just walked to Hebrew school together. Talking and probably competing with each other and, you know, making up stories. I think we did a lot of some of that. And then we get to Hebrew school, just I'll go here now, so which was at the Talmud Torah, which is in that picture over there. And that was all the different grades would be there, so one grade might be meeting and then we'd be waiting and, you know, there'd be lots of, you know, chasing and running around and name calling and whatever we would do. in our silly ways. But at one point they realized that we were a little bit disorganized, so they got games. They got the game of Sorry. I know we played Sorry hundreds of times. Like, whoever got there first, I was yellow, I was red, but there was a lot of that, which was a way of sort of keeping us occupied, waiting for the class to start. And before that, we would have had Sunday school. I remember being in Sunday school and doing Ring Around the Rosie and all that kind of stuff. And we had many Hebrew school teachers. I mean, they seemed to come about, they came and went very quickly. We had the Mikhoffs, we had the Rosenbergs, we had Rabbi Levin, we had Rabbi Birnbaum, a couple of others there too. And really, well, the Mikhoffs not so much, but there, you could see that they must have, I wonder what it was like for them coming to this small town where it was not very, It was a funny, Blaise Bay was different from Sydney. We're much more of a mixer, you know. There was people like your grandmother, Fanny, who, you know, was a very cultured woman and loved music and became very, very involved in the symphony and bringing music and became involved with Florence Adams, you know, and that community, which of course you knew, and so people could find someone in the general community, the overall community, the non-Jewish community, to share their interests with. But it wasn't always within the Jewish community. I think your grandmother went outside that more. I know my mother enjoyed going to concerts with her. I enjoyed your great grandfather, Mr. Gorelick. Oh, he was a lovely man. He was a very special guy. Liked him very much. He really liked kids. He just had a nice way with children, myself, Norman and I, but he was a very special guy. So I remember going to Atlantic Symphony concerts. I'm kind of rambling here, Eli, but otherwise it was kind of this is my take on it, and I don't even know if this was really true. I mean, it could have been the lens I saw it through, but there wasn't like a hierarchy, like, you know, you have a bit more money, so you sit here, whatever it is. There was a little bit of that in terms of buying seats in the synagogue. There was, you know, for the holidays and stuff like that, which goes on, I guess, in every community. But everybody participated quite fully. There was nobody getting more honors, it seemed to me. You got honors mostly because you were a regular there, and you could get a lot of, because you wanted to be involved, you wanted to be engaged. And I always felt Blaise Bay was a little bit different than Sydney in that way. I don't know why, maybe there was a prejudice from a small town looking at a little bit larger city, you know. So there was quite a mixing, and I found myself mostly kind of curious about these people. Like, I really didn't know them. We didn't really socialize with some of them outside of the synagogue, but every Saturday you would see them. And certainly on the high holidays, I was always fascinated by, even though it was a small town, more people came out during the high holidays than any other time of the year. Although as kids, we all had to go. We didn't really have a choice. Synagogue was what you did. Kids went to synagogue. So I think after your bar mitzvah, because women, girls did not have bat mitzvahs. Although the Rabbi Birnbaum did ask my mother if she would like me to have one, which she said no to because she had five boys. But I'm not sure. I mean, I was sort of drawn to it. But I don't even think the synagogue would have allowed it. They were very... It was an Orthodox style. There was a big, as you probably heard this one, a big rebellion when the women wanted to come from upstairs, downstairs. They had to court off a part of the downstairs because it was so hot during the high holidays that it was, you know, it was really, because of course it was un-air conditioned and what have you. So they really kind of insisted on coming downstairs. I think my mother might have led that, maybe your grandmother too. To come downstairs, and there was a big reaction to it, even from the women. No, we don't want to do that. And some insisted on staying upstairs, so those kind of movements into equality, but sharing some of the seeing women differently was hard to come by. But the women were also, you know, very central. The ladies' auxiliary, the Grace Bay Hadassah, they always had their Mother's Day teas, and we had our concerts, mostly Hanukkah concerts, Purim plays, you know, carnivals and all the things that you would have, which we really made the best of all the way through. Even in the later years, your dad and I were part of the last really large class of kids coming out of, Jewish kids coming out of Lace Bay. And so I think we had a lot of, we went to obviously Camp Kadima and Bilawim, and we brought a lot of enthusiasm back with us, so we would keep things going, and felt quite a commitment to continuing that fervor. But I think it took a toll as we all left. So back to Glace Bay. So I have actually very almost what the word like physical sensations of growing up in Glace Bay in the early days. We had weather, but you never really had a spring until like June was spring. It seemed to me that because after the ice came in from, you know, you'd have the breaking up and then all the ice would come in, so we'd have some cold weather again. So there was always a feeling that maybe May. In school, by the time school ended in June, you could feel like you could wear your sneakers, or you know, it was more. It felt like there was a sense of good weather. So a lot of the memories of going to school would be, you know, going to school in the fall. It wasn't a very pretty town growing up, because it was, first of all, it was a coal mining town, which meant a lot of people used coal. So there'd be coal everywhere, and the black soot would be on the snow. I don't want to say that it was ugly, because I don't even know if I knew what ugly was, because it was just what it was, right? It's sort of like you watch those old movies of like, How Green Was My Valley or something like that. You had that feeling of that, just the way things were. So I have some sort of sometimes even haunting feelings reflecting back on that, walking down. And when I go back, I go for long walks or go to different parts or drives and kind of, it has a, almost get a whiff of something that was from a long time ago. And so I sense that, I think my feelings about the synagogue were like that too. I think I was trying to link to things that were meaningful. And if you couldn't find them, you made them. And you know, I think that's what Jewish people do. When I think of our history as Jews, all through the centuries and all the persecutions and all the exiles and all the travels, is that we turn, to use expression, a sow's ear into a silk purse. You try very hard to bring meaning to your experience. And certainly, it was the 1950s, the 1960s when I was growing up. So, you know, it was a time of the harder you worked, the better you did. I mean, even though there were a lot of issues, as they got into the 70s more so with the coal mining and people being laid off and what have you, economic downturn really darkened things quite a lot. But in the 50s and 60s, I think it was kind of hopeful, you know, that things were going to get better. And Jews do well with a bit of hope. I think that's their story. I always think that. I don't think this is original, but... Yes, please.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I was thinking about.
I should turn those
yeah,
off.
Yeah, please, yeah, please. Yeah, please.
Yeah. Let me turn this off.
The first one is actually there's more words on the first one. Yes.
Hey, what's this?
This is all these are all images and materials from Jewish community in Gibra. This is mostly Glace Bay, almost exclusively Glace Bay, which is
I was thinking of, you know, the period in of the sort of the Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. You know how it was a way of trying to bring something to a very, very dark time. Mm. So I think there's a Jewish imagination, and I think that's probably what has kept people going. And I guess that's what I was saying to you before, like some people will imagine things that weren't quite like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a peaceful always community. There was lots of animosity between the Jewish and non-Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And but there was also warmth and acceptance among a number, I don't want to say most, but a large number, and an appreciation, and people could meet at different levels. Yeah, but I think what happens, this is my sense, because I remember going back to a high school reunion, and I think when they look back, when non-Jewish people that we grew up with look back on the Jews, I think it is positive overall.
Hmm.
I think there's a sense that, that it was good to know some Jews, or they're not all like that, or you know, it, some of the stereotypes were there, and sometimes they weren't. So, I mean, sometimes we lived up to the stereotypes. You know, there were people who did that. You know, who had lived up to certain stereotypes that people would have, but I'd say generally we did not.
Hmm.
I think they found us involved and engaged, and so I think looking back, I have a sense of people feeling they appreciated, you know, the Jewish community, and if they had meaningful encounters, then it would be just that meaningful. I think people really appreciated it and will hold those experiences highly in their memories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's something. What else? What else have we talked about? So there was, I think it was helpful having a Jewish camp to go to in the summertime. I think that was, it was good to be Jews from other parts of the Maritimes. It was also to know you could get along with people, you could get along with people who get along people, period, but you could also not get along people. Like, it just because they were Jewish didn't make them your best friend. And so I think that was a good experience to see the diversity, which I don't think I noticed as much growing up. I think I was very, I felt a responsibility for my Jewish classmates. And I was a bit, and this is probably a good thing. You learn how to get along with diverse people. And I might have done some of it by pretending they weren't so diverse, you know what I mean? But in fact, I think that you worked a little harder at least I did, I wouldn't say everybody did that, but at a certain camaraderie, because you could be, because you knew something of their experience. I remember talking to Elaine Lipschitz once, we were, and they were a very modest family, they lived very modestly. But she was walking home from school with a friend one day who said, you know, so where do you hide your money? You know, where do you hide it? Because obviously Jews are rich and you don't look like, you know, you don't live in a really beautiful home and you don't have all these things. And it was like Lane was trying to say, what you see is what it is, you know, but there was really beliefs that people harbored, quite, you know, I want to say primitive or infantile, these beliefs are true. It's sort of like, you know, with 9/11, that there were, you know, it was a Jewish conspiracy and that all the Jews got out in time. Like, that stuff is still, like, you'll see that in micro and macro levels. There's something about those belief systems that are really, really hard to break down. And so I think the only way you can break those things down is if there's some rapport, some intimacy that people have where they really start to think. And that wasn't always there, Eli. It was, and so, and you'd feel that you'd made progress or you really got through on some level, and people, because what you saw is what you, you know, what you see is what you get. But sometimes the beliefs would override that, and that was always interesting for me. I don't feel that myself now because, but I think it's still there. I just, you know, I can, as a kid, you don't have choices. You go to a school, you have these classmates, and you have this Jewish community at this time, or this larger community, you don't have choices. You know, you just do it. And I think there are people who can detach and go after what they're looking for, and some people who manage it a bit more, and as many people as there are, there are different responses. But you do meet a certain kind of limitation. That is, I think, a microcosm when something happens at a larger level. And if there's a bad experience that people have, because you're such a small minority, like if somebody has an experience where they feel they have been exploited in some way, then it's really hard to let that go. There was that wonderful series on anti-Semitism called The Longest Hatred. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's actually very worthwhile seeing it. There was one of the historians who was pointing out that, you know, in the shtetls, because basically the Jewish community did feel like a shtetl sometimes. It had all those, there's lots of ways that was, that feeling of a shtetl was there. But in the shtetls, when, like, because Jews couldn't have many jobs, they were money changers and what all the things that we all know about. And someone, you know, was in a difficult, an old Polish woman was having a difficult time, and she had to take her mother's, you know, precious necklace to get some money for food, and she brings it to someone who looks at it, and I mean, they don't see it as precious. They see it as, you know, what is monetary value. To the person, it might feel like gold and worth, you know, hundreds of dollars, and to the person who's going to move it along to somebody else, it doesn't really feel that way. But so you can see where these collisions would happen, you know, between people that did not have rapport, that had to be with each other in a certain way that didn't allow for deep understanding. But I know that there were, because we lived in Glace Bay and we weren't in a ghetto, and all that kind of exchanges, although there was the merchants, of course, I think people broke some of those down. I think they got to break some of those down. I wouldn't say it was, I'd say there's sort of a continuum, you know, where some people would be changed very dramatically. Some people never came with the prejudices. You know, their families didn't bring them up that way, so there was always an openness because of their own upbringing. But there would be a continuum that people would go back and forth on, and you just didn't really, you know, it was something that you couldn't take for granted. You really had to kind of work at.